Full Story is supported by CommBank. CommBank is dedicated to using the latest tech to create real change. From utilizing agentic AI to outsmart cybercrime, to solving complex problems at scale, their teams support more than 17 million Australians every day. And you could be part of it. CommBank is looking for senior technologists to help influence strategy, security, and innovation across one of Australia's leading tech environments. If you're a curious mind who thrives on collaboration and is eager to engineer real impact, search CommBank Tech Careers.
Hi, Ben. It's good to see you.
Good to be with you, Reggie.
We spoke in December when you were reporting on the immediate aftermath of the Bondi terror attack. It was a very difficult night. We're now 5 months later. The Commission has delivered this first interim report. What stands out to you?
Look, there are a few things. I think one of the things is that the Jewish community in Sydney saw this coming, that the Jewish community had sort of raised the alarm. They'd written emails to New South Wales Police. They'd said that, look, a terrorist attack is likely. Not that it's a possibility or not that they're concerned about it, but it's likely against the Jewish community in Sydney, and there's a high level of anti-Semitic vilification. I think the question that the Royal Commission is beginning to wrestle with and is going to interrogate in its public hearings is, well, what happened with that information? What happened with that concern? We've known about this increased level of anti-Semitic vilification and attacks. Did anything happen? It appears that in response to being told by the community security group that there was a high risk of an attack, that there was no risk assessment completed by the New South Wales Police before the Hanukkah by the Sea event in December. So this is where the focus of this commission will be, about what did we know in advance and what was done in response to that information.
Well, let's take a closer look at that, because it's a standout finding. Mm. It doesn't appear a comprehensive risk assessment was made, but Mal Lanyon, the police, have said, we did do a risk assessment. So what is happening there?
And I think this kind of exposes where we're going to start finding some gaps in what we're able to know. Like this interim report's 150-odd pages. There's a lot of information in there, but we can see what it can tell us, but we're also able to see what it can't tell us and what its limitations are. There's a lot that is classified in this interim report. 5 out of 14 recommendations we can't see.
They're secret.
Yeah, there's an entire chapter that's classified. We don't know what that's about. And Virginia Bell, the commissioner, has said that we're not going to go to the motivations and intentions of the Bondi shooters. No one who might be a witness in a criminal case will be called to give evidence. So there's this sort of lacunae that's going to exist at the heart of this. And in lots of ways, the government was very reluctant to call this Royal Commission to institute it. And one of the arguments was that there is a criminal trial proceeding, and Virginia Bell has been a judge for a very long time and will understand the need not to contaminate that trial at all with this Royal Commission. So there are going to be things that people will find unsatisfactory, and that this commission simply won't be able to go to those issues.
Let me ask you more about that, because what people are looking for is answers or an insight into how the accused attackers were able to carry out this massacre without being intercepted by authorities. Mm. Do we have any answers there in this report, and could we see answers later on?
Look, we don't have any answers, and whether this commission is the vehicle that will get us those answers, it's really difficult to tell at the moment. There are no sweeping calls for change. We had the Prime Minister out yesterday saying, look, no urgent changes are required to keep Australians safe. So the argument coming from the government is that the laws, the legislative framework, the resourcing is sufficient. I think where Virginia Bell is interested in interrogating is whether the resources were directed in the right way, specifically asked around ASIO, whether the resourcing for counterterrorism was adequate in a deteriorating security environment. So recognising that we're in a really difficult time in the world right now, that there is a heightened level of anti-Semitism. We've got a terrorism level that's been raised to probable, but what was done in response was enough dedicated to that issue. An example of that, I suppose, is the federal government's counter-terrorism coordinator. That's not a full-time job. the person that holds that position has a number of other responsibilities. They're related responsibilities, but the commission is already asking, well, shouldn't that be something that someone is dedicated to full time, given the kind of the gravity and the tragedy of these attacks, if and when they occur?
Well, let's come to counterterrorism in just a moment, but just to be clear, is the general flaw here the fact that there's a really tight timeline, that this Royal Commission just doesn't have a lot of time to get to what we want? Is the flaw is basically the reason that the Prime Minister didn't want this to begin with?
Look, I think it's a little bit of both. This is a very, very tight timeline. We haven't yet had any public hearings, and there is this kind of necessary restriction on not contaminating a criminal trial that is, you know, 15 counts of murder and more than 15 charges against Navid Akram, an incredibly serious trial. So these limitations are kind of baked in and are structural, and it's going to be difficult, I think, to work around those. I think the commission has valuable work to do. I think already we're seeing where the commission can find areas for improvement, but I don't think it's going to give us all the answers.
So we've had a little look at one finding about this risk assessment with New South Wales Police. That's given us a clue, perhaps, of what further the commission will look into. You've mentioned counter-terror. That seemed to be a significant part of this. Was the commissioner suggesting, perhaps, that there seemed to be a bit of a loss of focus with counter-terrorism in Australia?
I think so. I think there are lots of competing priorities for our intelligence and security agencies, foreign interference. There are conflicts going on all around the world. So there's, you know, it is a really difficult time to balance all of these different risks and threats. I thought one of the really interesting recommendations that came out from the interim report was that the commissioner would like to see the Prime Minister and national security ministers undertake a counter-terrorism training exercise within 9 months of an election, every time we have an election. And her phrase was a really interesting one for a judge, I thought, that she wanted ministers, the Prime Minister and minister, to be match fit for a counter-terrorism exercise.
That's fascinating. That suggests that she's saying there is this heightened threat here and we're not ready.
I suppose the implication you can read from that is that government ministers aren't match fit, that they would benefit from going through this exercise, however that would look, to be readied for the very real reality that Australia will face another attack of this sort.
And there was a bit of a suggestion of a funding issue.
I mean, Anthony Albanese portrayed it differently, saying that funding for counterterrorism has increased over the term of his government. And I think that's right in terms of the raw numbers. But I think the argument is more around proportionality and how much is dedicated towards counterterrorism and how much towards those other competing priorities.
Let's come back to the point you made about the counter-terror coordinator, the issue she had that was a part-time role. Why would she have highlighted something like that?
I think that speaks to the focus and the proportion, and this is not to suggest that the person in that job, a very senior public servant called Hamish Hansford, is not dedicated to his task and his work, but he has other competing priorities. He has other related areas where he's working, and I think Virginia Bell's argument is that this is incredibly serious. Counterterrorism is, as Bondi demonstrated in the most graphic and awful way, such a serious issue that it does need a dedicated coordinator whose sole task is to work and to coordinate those very many agencies. We live in a federation. There are state agencies and national intelligence agencies. All of that needs to be coordinated, and it really is, it is an incredibly difficult task.
I thought a lot of the language was very understated, but there she said, this other work takes up significant time.
That's very, very judicial language. Sometimes you need to read between the lines of what judges are telling you. I think she made that point pretty forcefully.
Which is why we're so glad you're talking to us about this, because there's a lot of complexity here. Just before we move on to some of the gun buyback recommendations, did you get a sense, when we're talking about the understated language, that the message here is that Australia has become a bit complacent when it comes to the threat of terror?
Complacency might be a little strong, but certainly in that direction. I think historically Australia has often thought it's removed from these issues. Global conflicts around the world that are happening a long way from here, but we are not inured from this. We are not immune from the forces of terror, and we are involved in this. I mean, Virginia Bell made the point that the Iran war that was precipitated by the US and Israel, but in which Australia is militarily involved, where we've sent materiel and we've sent troops, we've sent weapons. We were involved in the torpedoing of an Iranian warship. We had sailors on board a submarine. that has increased the risk of attacks directed at the Australian Jewish community.
That's really interesting that she pointed out the Iran war specifically.
I think that's a really strong point that the commissioner made, and it locates what happened in Bondi, it locates what happened in Australia in that broader global context, that our involvement in these international conflicts, our position in these is a part of the background to all of this.
I mean, in that case, I do have to ask you about what we've seen in the UK, because she wants better policing of Jewish festivals. That was one of her other recommendations. It's kind of hard to not see this in light of a string of anti-Semitic attacks in the UK, most recently a stabbing being treated as a terror incident.
I think that's absolutely right. This is a global trend. I think the Jewish community in Sydney will tell you that not only are they feeling a heightened sense of anti-Semitic vilification, but they see it around the world, and Jewish communities around the world are experiencing this.
Let's come to the gun buyback scheme and the changes in that legislation. She had some, I think, relatively strong words to say about that.
Yeah, unduly leisurely was an interesting way to put it, that the kind of move towards nationally consistent gun laws and a national gun buyback program was progressing unduly leisurely. This is taking too long. This is an urgent issue. Access to firearms was obviously a key part of what occurred in Bondi, and the fact that the Australian states and Commonwealth can't get their act together to implement this buyback, to implement nationally consistent laws, is, when you think about it, quite extraordinary. Do we need another Bondi? Do we need another Port Arthur before this happens? And I mean, I'm old enough. I was in high school at the time, and I remember a Queensland Premier basically imploding his own premiership in order to support, he was the Conservative Prime Minister, Rob Borbidge, and he pushed through the gun laws in Queensland against fierce opposition to give us the gun buyback laws we had after Port Arthur, which have benefited Australia enormously. We don't seem to have that political will now. We're not seeing that from the Crisafulli government. We're seeing them outright reject some of these key recommendations. And there is immense frustration that this country can't get itself organised as something as fundamental as gun laws.
Well, given, as you say, Queensland has rejected the buyback plan and the government wants to implement all of these recommendations, what hope is there that they can do this on gun buybacks?
Look, it's looking really difficult. At the moment, New South Wales is the only sort of clear supporter of this push. Northern Territory has sort of ruled out participation. There's lots of wavering from the various states. It does seem that there is a lack of sort of political will, and I'm not quite sure if Bondi is not going to do it, then what's going to crystallise that political will?
We'll be right back.